Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bishop.
Right, may we start, Comrade? Of tired people. Right. Advocate Mutibi and your team, we want to welcome you to this engagement. As well as the Auditor General, welcome you. I want to request comrades once again that let us switch off our cellular phones so that they do not affect our proceedings. Please switch off your cellular phone. Please switch off your cellular phone because without failure, it will ring. That's what I know. And if the rules of Parliament allowed, I would certainly have a resident sangoma sitting somewhere there to sniff out those who don't comply, because compliance seems to be an issue. So. Please. All right. Now, please. Let's proceed. Advocate, we'll allow you and your team to introduce yourselves so that we know who is here. And then the Auditor General's office will also introduce themselves. And then members of Parliament will also introduce themselves, and then we can then proceed. Maybe let me hand over to you and your team to introduce yourselves so that we know who is here.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson of SCOPA and Honourable Members of SCOPA. My name is Andy Mutibi. I'm the head of SIU. I would like each one of my colleagues to introduce themselves, but with your permission, Chair, I would like to just introduce one member especially on my immediate left. I'd like to introduce Mrs. Caroline Mampuru. She joins us from the 1st of September as the deputy head of SIU. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Member.
Morning, Chair, and morning, Honourable Members. My name is Leonard Lekgetho, and I'm the project director for SIU, responsible for investigation. Thank you.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Gerard Versaghi, and I am the SIU's head of civil litigation.
Morning, Chair, morning, Members. I am Gina Haas, Program Manager at the SIU for the SABC investigation.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Andre Gernand. I'm the CFO of the SIU.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Sefura Mongalo, the Acting Communications Manager of SIU.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Gunay Meiber. I'm from the Office of the Auditor General.
I'm a business executive responsible for, amongst other, SIU and a couple of other audities.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Stanley Mafunyiswa. I'm the audit manager responsible for the SIU audit.
Okay, thank you. Comrades,
we'll
introduce ourselves. Dumela Mdula Stulo. Lebiso la ga ke sa ke ke ka na ke member of committee.
Good morning. My name is Thabelo Chilo. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. Thabiso Nkuno is my name, member of the committee.
Molweni Ntombofu Yomente, of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Mkhulekwe Hlengwa, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Tim Bradesses from the great province of KwaZulu-Natal and a very proud SCOPA member.
The only proud member.
Good morning. David Ross, member of the committee.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Koti. I chair the committee. Right. Advocate Mutibi, you know the genesis of this meeting was our engagement as the SABC sometimes in, it was in June. Yeah, somewhere there. Yeah. When we met with the interim board of the SABC and ourselves to look at the work that you were possibly going to be doing at the SABC. Arising out of the work of the Parliament's ad hoc committee on the SABC. Because last year in October at our Strickland review session at this committee, we resolved that Parliament should take its rightful position as the center in the fight for good governance and against mismanagement, maladministration, and corruption. And that SCOPA will be the lead organ through which Parliament fulfills that objective. And that to do so, we'll therefore need to marshal all resources, state organs and civil society organizations, marshal them behind this committee, so that the expertise, the capacity, the knowledge, the information that they have can be used to empower the committee to do its work better and effectively, so that Parliament can fulfill its constitutional obligation and also its political responsibility as the representatives of the people. So to that end, we have sought to therefore reach out to all organs that we believe could assist us to fulfill that noble objective that we have for ourselves. And it is in that context, therefore, that listening to your deliberations, we realized that maybe having you as part of the anti-corruption task team robbed us of an opportunity to engage in a much, much focused way with the with yourselves, basically to look much more intensely on the work you do, but then to say, how then can that feed into the work that we do as a committee? I think that is the. So you are not here as the accused, as is always the case. So you can lower your guards. It's going to be an easy meeting. We just want to get a sense. And like I said, we finished almost around 11 last night. So we all want to have an easy day today. So from our side, we have no intention of keeping us longer than will be necessary, but will be in your hands. Now, we got your presentation.
Yes.
Something that hardly happens in the committee, because we have our own story, so whoever comes here talks to our story, rather than listening to your story. But yes, in the sense, we want to hear from you. And I see that there's a lot of information here. But I'm just wondering if there's a way in which we can... I think the rest of the information, we've all gone through it.
That's
yeah, so if we could zoom in on those key elements and areas, having in mind what I said is the objective of the meeting. When we finish
right.
here,
yes.
we must have identified the areas, the means, and the way in which we can improve together going forward. So if we can just tease out those key areas, and then when you're done, I'm sure comrades will have some areas around which they may want further clarity, further discussions, and that will assist us then now to go even deeper. Right?
Right.
We're in your hands.
Thank you very much, Chair. We appreciate the opportunity to come and present to the committee and just take the committee through the work that we do. As you'll see, we've really framed out our presentation along the lines of covering those areas that the committee would then be informed in terms of how we do our work. The legislative mandate will cover that, and we'd like to cover through the SIU delivery model. We'll take the committee through the proclamations, the current proclamations, and the proclamations where we are almost at the end, where we, busy preparing the report. We'll take the committee through the performance information, and I'm glad that the Auditor General is here. Just as a note, we've gone through this process, and we've reached a stage where we'll probably be presenting without really pronouncing it today, Chair, for obvious reasons, but it still has to be presented. But the next time we come, we'll be able to pronounce that we've really had a good outcome from that audit process. We'll take the committee through the civil litigation process and where we are. Here we take the approach that we'd inform the committee on those matters that have been taken to court. And then we'd also like to take the committee through some organizational review and enhancements that we are busy with, just so that we increase on the capacity of the committee, of the SIU. The legislative mandate, Chair, this derives from the Special Investigations Unit and the Special Tribunals Act. Would like to just take you also just through our vision. At the end of the presentation, Chair, we'll also be saying we would like to ensure that we really achieve this vision, in the sense that we would like to be the state's preferred and trusted forensic investigation and litigation agency. We'll probably talk more about that later on, what informed this vision. Of importance is that going through our capacity and skills, we are satisfied that we compete equally with the forensic firms out there. So in terms of the vision, we would like to continue to be the state's preferred forensic investigation and litigation services, working together with others in the fight to eradicate corruption, malpractice, and maladministration from society. And this is where we would
then locate ourselves within the multi-agency approach, in particular the ACTT initiatives. Our major functions being to investigate corruption, maladministration, and malpractice. We have the niche SIU, which is the Institution of Civil Proceedings, in our own name, on behalf of the state institutions. As part of our work, we do make referrals to the prosecuting authority and to other authorities where there has been infractions relating to tax. We refer to SARS and to FIC as need may be. We do make referrals where we come across the evidence of misconduct. We do then refer them to accounting authorities or accounting officers. Our powers, Chair, are enabled by the legislation. We are enabled to subpoena, search and seize evidence, and also interrogate witnesses under oath, but this only happens once the proclamation has been issued and gazetted, for that matter. We, as I indicated, we institute civil litigation to recover state funds lost to prevent future losses. Out of our mandate, or out of the scope, is the powers to arrest or powers to prosecute, as I indicated. In those instances, we refer matters to relevant authorities. We do not ourselves implement disciplinary actions, but we do refer and follow up with state institutions. We work closely with other agencies where our powers indeed would fall short, and just to ensure that the value chain is not hampered. Chair, if we move on to slide number 5, I'd like to take the committee through our operating model. We've called it delivery model. We do have the phase that we call case assessment phase, but in the main, it's what we always call pre-proclamation stage. When we receive the allegations from various sources, those could be from whistleblowers, from the hotline. It could be from state institutions themselves. We then follow up. We assess and verify the allegations and any evidence that could have been provided at that stage or any documentation that's available at that stage. That really we do to enable us to assess whether that's within the scope and it merits the preparation for the motivation for the proclamation. We draft the motivation once we are satisfied that it got to be, you know, proclaimed. The motivation and the schedule to the motivation, which sets out the scope for our investigation. So, as I indicated, that the proclamation is then sent through to the Department of Justice and then ultimately to the Presidency. But in that process, we do not just wait. And wait for the proclamation. In anticipation, our teams continue to do the analysis of the documentation that we have received at that time, and we set up the project and do the investigation planning, just so that when the proclamation is issued, we are ready for investigation. As I indicated, the powers that are in the legislation, we can only exercise them once the proclamation has been issued. The next slide, Chair, really just shows the process. Once the proclamation is issued, not going through it in detail, we then do the project plan, and the LOE in the second block stands for Letter of Engagement. More often, the state institution accounting authorities do require that we take them through our process. How is it that we're going to conduct the investigation? We engage with the accounting authorities. The letter of engagement includes the scope, how we're going to go about investigating, and it does include cost implications as well. We collect and analyze evidence in the process. We conduct interviews and obtain affidavits. We refer matters to relevant authorities in the process without waiting for the ultimate report to be issued, simply because time is of the essence in dealing with these matters. When we pick up evidence pointing to criminal action, we there and there refer it for criminal investigation and prosecution. The ultimate output is the reports presented to the Office of the President. I'd like to just indicate, Chair and members, that during this process, we do, from time to time, based on the letter of engagement, we do go back to state institutions at regulated times to give them updates of where we are, what are the deliverables we have reached, what are the outcomes. And that we do simply because we have experienced that, you know, for state institutions to motivate for payments, they would like to know what has been delivered. So that we then attach to the invoice just so that the state institutions are able to support the payments. If I move on, Chair, still on the SIU delivery model, I did mention that our powers become operational once the proclamation is issued and gazetted. We go through the letter of engagement. I've already indicated that. We do operate, as honorable members would be aware, on a recovery cost and fees in terms of our legislation. But we do issue invoices and provide proof of the delivery to the state institutions. We collect and analyze further evidence. We conduct interviews and obtain affidavits. Institution of civil litigation, where appropriate or required, we do that on behalf of state institutions. I did indicate that where appropriate, we refer matters for prosecution and for recovery as well as part of the asset forfeiture unit. We also refer matters to state institutions for disciplinary hearings. I did indicate that where other authorities also are involved, SARS, regulatory bodies, FIC, and so on, we do work in conduct with them. And then we ultimately issue the report to the Office of the President. Chair, I should pause at this stage that it is obviously the statutory requirement that the report is issued to the President, but in conjunction with the Presidency does contact the state institutions where the reports have been issued, and they do make them aware of the outcomes of the report, just so that the outcomes will be able to be followed on. The next slide, Chair, just indicates to the honourable members the rates that we charge out, and those rates, Chair, have really been benchmarked. We are of the view that they are pretty much to say market related would really be an overstatement. We are cheaper than other forensic firms out there. The next slide, Chair, is really just to indicate the headcount. We are, as at the 31st of August, standing at 521, 401 of which are in operations, and in the support services, we've got about 120. That chart indicates the spread out by race and by gender. So I really won't go much into that. If there's any questions, they can come through. The next slide also just indicates the headcount per level from management down to other officials, just to, you know, indicate the equity in the organization, Chair. Chair, we have noted, not without concern, that if you look at the semi-skilled and unskilled level, it's mainly on the female side, and predominantly on the gender side is predominantly female, would like to just indicate to the chair that we are putting in place measures to ensure that we track who are those, are there any opportunities of progressing them to ensure that they become skilled. Chair, the next slide just indicates the total business operation staff complement per province. Chair, you will see there that you know we are spread out in the 8 provinces. The province that we do not have a presence is the Northern Cape. We are in the process of considering whether you know we should really have a presence in the Northern Cape. The biggest number of our employees are in Gauteng, as you can see. So, Chair, without talking to each and every block, the committee would have noted that. Chair, I come now to the our core business, which is the proclamations. I said we'll take the committee through the current proclamations that are underway, the proclamation that we've received. If you start off on slide 13, we indicate to the committee there that since January 2009, SIU has received 81 proclamations from the presidency. And they are made up of 89 original proclamations and 9 extensions and 5 amendments. Chair, the extensions and amendments would really happen where if there's a proclamation running, we come across new allegations and so on, just so that we avoid scope creep. By legislation, we go back and ask for an extension or an amendment. Chair, if you look at the spread out of the proclamations since 2009, 2010, just spreading out to 17 and 18. Chair, you'll see that they are really spread out with the big number being there in 2010 and 2011, and you can see that they sort of went down up to 13, 14, and then they spiked up again into 13, 16, 17, and that's where we're sitting to date. We are in almost September, 6 months before the end of the financial year. We're already at 9. So we are ensuring that as allegations come in, we process them as quickly as possible, just so that there's nothing that stays that stands unattended. The next slide, Chair, we thought would be appropriate to show the committee the spread out of the proclamations by sphere of government. You'll see that mainly the proclamations are at a national government level, followed by provincial government, followed by local government. We do have a slightly slower number on the state-owned entities. And our observation, Chair, is that in the state-owned entities, they tend to utilize a quite a large number of incidents we've seen where private forensic firms are used to investigate. And more often, once the investigation is completed, more often we get approached as SIU to say, no, this is the report and the outcome of the forensic investigation report by a private firm, where we'll obviously have to sort of see what more can be done, and we end up picking up. Just from the observation, is that if we were to achieve our mission and our vision, we could see that number going up. But we don't leave it there, Chair. We reach out and ensure that we we publicize ourselves so that the state-owned entities as well can become aware of our capability. And then we should see that line being opened up. Chair, the next slide, slide number 15, shows the proclamations per region. As you can see on the extreme left, it still shows that at a national level, we've got quite a big number. Then we show Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng. You see there as you go along, the lowest number is shown in the Northwest Province, and then the last one being Eastern Cape. After national, the committee would see that following national is Gauteng Province with 13, and then you go on to KwaZulu-Natal, and then you go to Limpopo, and then Limpopo and Western Cape are showing the similar numbers. Chair, the next slide, slide number 16. We do show there that the final reports that have been submitted to the presidency for those proclamations that have been issued since 1 April 2009. 2013-2014, we issued 8 final reports, 14-15-1, 15-16-10, the last financial year, 6 reports, and this year we're sitting already at 4. As you will see later on, that we're trying to really ensure that we turn around the investigations, Chair, and also improve on the outputs. You'll see that there's quite a number of reports that will be coming through. And later on, you'll see that we'll be indicating to you, Chair, that each report or each investigation may actually produce quite a number of outcomes. It can produce a number of disciplinary hearings, it can produce a number of civil litigation, a number of criminal prosecutions. So at the stage when we submit the report to the presidency, these outputs, be it civil, be it criminal, be it disciplinary, they would at that time already have been actioned. So Chair, I need to just then move on to the next slide. The next slide indicates the list of complete final reports, and this list, Chair, without really going into detail, as you can see there, we start giving almost a detail of the outcomes and so on. But you would see there that that's where we show, if you look at slide 17, Chair, if you look at the first one, Proclamation 36 of 2010, that's the Department of Arts and Culture. There, the outcomes column would show that, we picked up there that the irregular expenditure of about 94 million, fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 24 million. The report was submitted in 2013. I need to just pause here, Chair, that a CASA recalculation would tell you that we took about, 3 years to investigate to the report. So, Chair, we have observed that and we have identified that we need to improve on the turnaround times. Some of them, as you go through the list, some of them would be about 4-5 years, but Chair, as we improve on the turnaround times, we do take into account that we have to ensure that the quality is not compromised, so that we produce a qualitative output. So we've realized that given the complexity of each and every investigation, we may take longer than a year or two. But in that event, we have decided that, and you'll see later on the measures that we have put in place to turn around the investigations quicker, we've decided that where an investigation takes longer than a year, we have to then produce an interim report. That report should, at that stage, indicate what are the deliverables that we have achieved, so that we don't wait 2-3 years before we report on what the outcome of the investigation is. I think that would really go a long way in indicating our results. So, Chair, taking your comment earlier on that the report would have been read, I will not go through each proclamation unless the committee prefers each proclamation line by line. Those are the ones that have been submitted at the national level, and you see the number is 6. If you go on the next page, Chair, the provincial government level, we've submitted about 11 reports, and you'll see it's a similar trend. It's the proclamation number, the department or the state institution that we have done the work for, and we show the outcomes. And Chair, I should just indicate here that you'd see that in some of the lines of the outcomes, we just say, you know, SARS referral to the state institutions in terms of disciplinary. Some we show the numbers, some we do not. It's because we are still busy with a comprehensive exercise, Chair, dating back from the time we received this proclamation and issued the report, where we do a comprehensive analysis of the actual outputs and possibly put at the end, the value, and that we can really determine the impact that we have made. But although you can have a sense already by going through these lines, for example, on page 18, Chair, the first one we say, on the outcomes column, disciplinary recommendations 2, SAPS referrals 2. The next one, which is proclamation 59 on 2013, we say disciplinary recommendations. Ideally, we should be consistent and also have the numbers there. But the exercise will be complete, and my colleague, Mr. Lekgetho, is championing that. We should, if required, Chair, once that exercise is completed, even before our next appearance, we can send it through, just to make sure that we complete that. But already, as I say, you can see, Chair, that just one report can have so many outcomes. And in that way, we believe that we are really making the necessary impact. And just to repeat, that those outcomes do not wait until the final report. We send them throughout the investigation, as we will demonstrate even with the newest investigations that we have received. The next slide is still the continuation of the provincial proclamations where we've submitted the reports. It's the same trend, Chair, where we're showing the state institutions the outcomes and the date on which the report was submitted. With your permission, Chair, I'll move on to slide number 20, which shows local government. On the local government side, we submitted eight reports, and again, that one is really where we have to do some work with this analysis that we are doing in terms of indicating the number of outcomes. So we'll do that exercise, Chair, and ensure that the committee is informed. On the next slide, with slide 21, which shows the state-owned entities, You'll see that we did some work on the Proclamation 58 of 2010 at the South African Broadcasting Corporation. There are the good outcomes that we have shown in that investigation. The regular expenditure of about 428 million, fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 36 million, with some non-compliance with policies, disciplinary recommendations of about 464 of them, SAPS referrals and SARS referrals. Chair, maybe I should pause here that we are considering as part of our follow-up together with the presidency, not only in the SABC environment, but with other outcomes and other reports, we'd like to ensure that we enhance and improve on our follow-ups. We'll talk about that later on in terms of how we are improving that. We did some work at the state information technology. There's been some good outcomes there, as you can see, at the South African Post Office, and we did work before at ESCOM. And those are the outcomes that are projected there. Chair, if I proceed, you'll see there on slide number 22, we are reporting to the committee that there were 34 final reports, those that were proclaimed prior to 2009. We just thought we take the committee through that phase, that period as well. And the same trend, you'll see there that, you know, from 2009, 13, 14, 14, 15, and 15, 16, those are the numbers that we show. These are just the final reports. 11 and 12, there were possibly no reports at that time submitted, Chair, if you see that gap. If I proceed on, it's really on the same trajectory. We're showing that that period at the national government level, we submitted 5 reports. You'll see there, Chair, those showing the outcomes. So if you look at the picture depicted, Chair, there's really been good outcomes from the previous investigations. Of importance, Chair, is just to really improve on the follow-ups, to ensure that we follow up whether those, you know, the state institutions have carried out the recommendations that that we have made. Slide 24 is a continuation of the reports submitted to national government prior to 2009. Page 25, it's the submission of final reports prior to 2009 at provincial government. In this regard, we submitted 19 reports. But of those 19, you'll see there, Chair, that, again, a number of outcomes that has been really reached. But, again, I need to just say, if you look at the time the proclamation was proclaimed and the date of submission, it just gives an indication of the number of years that SIU took to investigate, which just raises a question around the length of time that it took to turn around the investigations. The next slide, slide 26, is still a continuation of the final report submitted prior to 2009 at the provincial level. It's still the same process showing various proclamations, state institutions, and the outcomes reached and the date submitted. Slide number 27 is a continuation of the provincial work that we have done, provincial proclamations and reports. Again, it's still the same trajectory, Chair. Proclamation, state institution, and outcomes. Chair, if you move on to the next slide, that shows the work that was done at the local government. There we submitted 10 final reports with, again, the same information showing the outcomes that were reached. The next slide, slide 29, also showing still local government. And on slide 30, Chair, so before I continue on slide 30, that really indicates the number of proclamations that have been issued prior to 2009 and since 2009, Chair. And we've split it that way, that's just so that the committee can have a sense that there's really been quite a number of proclamations issued, and the impact can be seen. I think of importance, Chair, and we have really acknowledged that we need to lift up how we communicate these outcomes out there for the public to see the impact that we are doing. Our communicators, the managers of communications in the justice portfolio, are busy with a plan to ensure that we do a collective communication, which will probably be led by the ministry, just so that the appropriate communication can be issued out there. The next slide, Chair, indicates the proclamations that are pending, but on slide 30, you can see, Chair, that final reports are being prepared. That's quite a number. And it's simply because we have sought to unblock our processes just so that we can churn out the outputs. And again, Chair, we do this to ensure that we still keep the quality of reports that we submit. So as the line indicates at the top of slide 30, we are busy with about 21 final reports that we are preparing at the moment. And we anticipate that by the end of this financial year, we will drive hard to ensure that all of those are submitted to the presidency. And as I say, submission is one aspect, but following up is also another aspect on the referrals that we have made already. And we have put in place measures that we do follow up just so that we can see that the impact required has been made. Chair, if you move to slide 31, it shows there the final reports that are still being prepared at a level, a provincial level, local government and state entities level. At a provincial level, we're busy with 3. At a local level, we're busy with 7 reports that are being prepared. And at a state-owned entities, we're busy with 1 report.
I see my hometown is listed there.
Yes.
Not a mistake.
Yes, Chair. On the next occasion, Chair, we interact. We will spell out the outcomes that have come out of that investigation, Chair. If we move on, Chair, slide number 32, we show the committee. There are 27 proclamations where investigations are still ongoing. And, Chair, I need to again just underline that we have acknowledged that we really need to speed up and turn around our investigations as quickly as is possible to make sure that we achieve the necessary results. If you look at the first one there, Chair, it was issued in 2012. It's Proclamation R54 of 2012, Department of Water Affairs. You can see there that one final presidential report was submitted and one investigation is still ongoing. That part of one still ongoing, this would have been the situation where a big aspect of the investigation was closed out. But then I still say, from 2012 to date, that indicates that in the what, five years, we have really noted that it's quite a long time, Chair. If we continue on that trajectory, we are not likely to achieve our mission of being a preferred service provider. But as the Chair would note later on, we have put in place measures to ensure that we have improved, and we have seen improvements already. So we will ensure that we implement those measures. So, Chair, without going through it line by line, members would have had the opportunity to see the ongoing investigations are depicted on slide 32, slide 33, and slide 34. Slide 34 includes the newest proclamation on the state institutions, which is R29 of 2017 for the South African Broadcasting Corporation. That investigation, the proclamation has just been issued, Chair, was issued on the published on the 1st of September 2017. And with the investigation commenced on Monday, the 4th of September 2017. Chair, if we move on, we thought it appropriate, Chair, just so that we depict the performance information. On the next slide, we show you the outcome or the results of the performance of 2015-2016. Chair, you'll see there that there were about seven indicators or targets, of which only two were achieved in 2015-2016. And, Chair, we sat back and we really looked at what is it that needed to improve, and we put in place measures to improve our performance, Chair. Chair, if you then turn the page, that page shows the performance for the year 2016-2017. Chair, that picture indicates that we have really sort of turned the situation around. There's only two indicators that were not achieved. The rest were achieved, and those indicators, Chair, as you can see, are the ones in red. The indicators that were not achieved is the value of money and or assets potentially recoverable, actual value of money and or assets recovered. So we did a root cause analysis in terms of why is it that those indicators were not achieved, and we'll come to it on the next slide. In these two indicators, Chair, we indicate that there were a number of matters, as I stated in our previous slides, that when we do the investigation and we pick up evidence indicating that there's a need for recovery, we refer those matters to the Asset Forfeiture Unit. During this year, the previous financial year and the prior financial year, we picked up that there were challenges at the Asset Forfeiture Unit, and that challenge was as a result of the civil litigants who were challenging at court the AFU process. We are following up with the National Prosecuting Authority to find out if those challenges have been addressed. My latest information is that the challenge at court has been finalized, and the ruling was referred back to the courts for assessment. We are hoping for a best outcome. In which case, Chair, the NPA would then be in a position to then process those. And then you can see there that we've quantified the amount that could be recovered in that process to in excess of about 300 million. And if these challenges were not experienced, we would have seen a different picture in terms of the performance. Chair, we also, as I indicated, that during our investigations, we do institute civil proceedings. The civil proceedings as well require a certain process, and at the end of the process, Chair, firstly, we pray for the court to set aside irregular contracts. Once that declaratory order is granted, there's then this second inquiry within the same civil litigation of just and equitable payment. That's where really the court assesses what is the right recovery to order. So there has we found that there has been a delay in that process, and the delay is simply because of the queue that we queue with the litigants at the civil courts, and hence our initiative to re-establish the special tribunal. The special tribunal is provided for in our legislation, and that special tribunal will help a lot in terms of channeling our cases through to that tribunal. And if we get it off the ground, we will see a good turnaround of the... We'll talk about it again when we come to the civil litigation section. Chair, on that slide 38, you'll see there that we indicate the previous profile of the cases that we had. In the past, we had, SIU had a SAFA investigation, and that investigation had a whole lot of output within it, and amongst others, there were a whole lot of acknowledgement of debts being signed off, and we would obviously follow up and ensure that those debts are paid from those people who irregularly were receiving grants and so on. So that investigation has sort of been completed, and the profile of the cases that we receive are no longer as similar to that one. We also refer to the land reform one, where there has been a lot of recipients of lands who were not supposed to receive and who were able to recover, but the profile of cases have also since changed. We've seen that also as an indication or as a contributor. Chair, the next slide 39, just really is a repeat of what I've said, just graphically, is the challenges faced by AFU. We have quantified the amount, civil matters, and the change in our profile cases, Chair. So going forward, Chair, we will ensure that we monitor that space, and I have indicated to my colleagues that we need to do an analysis of those two indicators. Let's monitor them closely, and we must really ensure that wherever we realize that there's matters that we can process and process quickly, we need to make sure that we put effort into those matters and make sure that we recover. So I did indicate that we have sat down and made an analysis of how is it that we can improve our turnaround times. We've included in the presentation the principles that we have considered that could assist us to improve our turnaround times. Slide number 40. We've noticed, Chair, that previously proclamations were generic and wide in ambit. And if it's generic and wide, it's really not assisting the investigation process. So now the new strategy is to obtain the proclamations that are specific as possible, and where matters will only be investigated that relate directly to the allegations that have been received. The newest proclamation would be an example. If you look at the proclamations that have been gazetted. As I indicated, Chair, that given the complexity of our investigations and that we do not at all want to compromise on our quality of investigations, we do accept that there would be those investigations that would be more than a year, more than 2 years. But in that case, the number B there indicates that for multi-year proclamations, we now submit interim reports. And interim reports indicate what are the deliverables and the outcomes that have been reached. And we do interact just so that we give appropriate statements to the state institutions so that they understand the outcomes that have been reached. Point number C has got similar focus with point number B for long-running proclamations, and where it makes appropriate sense, we'll do interim reports, which are finalized in terms of completed focus areas. And Chair, number D, we have introduced project reviews, just so that we engage the investigation teams on an ongoing basis. It's very intense, but it has delivered good results for us. Where we then get the investigation team, the program manager, together with the project director who's sitting with us today, just so that they present and indicate this is where the investigation is, this is what's happening, these are the, hiccups or any glitches that they're experiencing, but then we then interrogate how is it that we can assist. You know, so Chair, that process has really helped us, you know, unleash some of the issues that are prevalent, and we've been able to resolve that. And hence, you see the pipeline of the reports that are pending, that have been prepared for submission. Chair, if I move on, slide 41 is really a landing page for the civil litigation section. As I indicated when I started, Chair, that the civil litigations are those matters that are at court, and these are sitting in various courts, Chair, and they affect various departments. And Chair, you'll see that on that slide, it's really showing that if the process, the litigation process, can improve and sped up, the potential recoveries are really quite high. And if we can be able to turn around that space as quickly as possible, we will see good results and good impact, Chair. So the civil matters, Chair, are shown on page 42, 43, up to 45. Chair, just taking your word, I will not go through it case by case unless there's a question that any member wants to raise. Chair, I just made a quick calculation of the estimated potential recovery just on these cases alone. I come to the figure of more than 650 million that if these matters are finalized, we will see that estimated recovery coming through. Obviously, this is still subject to just an equitable assessment by the courts. Chairperson and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, slide number 46, it's the landing page where we now want to take the committee through the organisational enhancements that we are busy with. The organizational enhancements, Chair, the business case for that, or what we call a case for change, is nothing more than the improvements that we have identified that we need to do. And those improvements vary from organizational capacity, people improvements, systems improvements, and just to ensure that we improve on our governance and accountability levels. Just that one slide, I'll talk the committee through. It's really a case for change and the strategic focus. at the next occasion, Chair, we've just submitted our revised or updated strategy to the Department of Justice. That was due on the 31st of August. We've also just submitted our APP on the 31st of August. we will then await to then present at the next occasion we appear, Chair. But just to take the Honourable Committee through the snapshot of the case for change, our vision stays the same because we believe that it's really an achievable vision. If we improve on our capacity, improve on our resources, we turn around our investigations appropriately, the quality of investigations, quality of reports, we should see that state institutions, including state-owned entities, when they would like to refer matters for forensic investigations, we would like SIU to be top of mind. So we need to make sure that we increase our capacity generally and be a performance-based organization, just so that when we are prepared, we are able to produce the results as expected. The mission, I took the committee earlier on through that. On the strategic goals in the middle there, Chair, we would like to still make the impact that's required in terms of the public expectation, expectation of Parliament, and including this honourable committee. We would like to make sure, Chair, that we need really to proactively influence the systemic and behavioural root causes of maladministration and corruption. And Chair, you see, we've done a very good analysis of how is it that we can influence that space. We will beef up our capacity so that we improve on the scenario analysis and the trend analysis using our data analytics. At the moment, our data analytics requires improvement, and by doing that, if we improve our data analytics, Chair, we should then be able to go back to state institutions and say proactively, this is the data that we have following the investigations that we've done. We've put a data repository, we've analyzed it, and this is what it's telling us. These are the corruption risk areas, so to speak. It's a normal risk assessment approach so that the state institutions can take that into account when they plan, when they do their risk management, so that they can then put in place the required controls, Chair. This is the value add that we would like to make. And if we really implement this strategy, we will make sure that we will really input on the prevention side. We would like to lift up our initiative around public education as well. Stakeholder relations, stakeholder engagement, we've already started with those initiatives. We would like to achieve appropriate legal outcomes against perpetrators of maladministration and corruption, Chair. In this instance, Chair, we would like to make sure that wherever anyone is identified during the investigation and there's a need for action, either disciplinary, civilly, or criminally, we would like to make sure that those actions are taken. But just continuing with the strategic focus, Chair, as I indicated, we would like to establish a focused governance and accountability model. We would like to ensure that we improve our operation through operational improvement that can really ensure that we reach our targets. We would like to stay relevant within the changing environment, and by so doing, we would like to also make sure that we really benchmark with our peers out there. We would like to ensure the bottom there just that the operating environment remains stabilized so that the organization continues to achieve. On the governance and accountability, Chair, we'd like to make sure that our current regional model is properly defined and that our regions also have the capability to do business development on themselves. So, Chair, that's really just in brief our case for change. The next slide, Chair, it's really a bit of a detailed slide, but just in brief, it's a slide that takes the committee through our high-level value chain, which is the process that we would like to implement. The value chain is there at the moment, and some of the areas. If you look at the top blue line is really the line that shows the steps in the process. We receive allegation. I did take the committee through when we talked about the operating model. We register, and then we do the feasibility in terms of assessment, and we do the scoping, and then followed by the proclamation and the rest of the steps, as the steps that I really took the committee through. But we would like to make sure that we really improve on that. We want to make sure that all allegations are tracked and monitored. We want to increase the number of allegations that are converted into cases. In this instance, they also improve on the communication back to the whistleblowers and to state institutions so that they are aware of where we are with those allegations. Chair, we want to ensure that at just below the top line, where we're saying we want to ensure that we've got the central allegation and case registration, which at the moment requires improvement, tracking and transparent reporting. Chair, we want to make sure, if you look at the third block there, we want to follow up and track on our recommendation. That's the part that really requires improvement at the moment. You see that on your extreme left and right are what we call sort of call-outs on those circles. The first call-out on the right-hand side is that we want to monitor the SIU impact. We want to transform the way we scope and do our cases. We want to improve the quality and turnaround times of investigation. In the middle there, we want to expand the monitoring and evaluation of our cases. Chair, as you move down that chart, where it's saying data analysis, market data analysis is set from the bottom. That's the new area that we'd like to introduce and make sure that we do those scenarios, risk assessments, trend analysis, and we have just made an example there on the next line in terms of the advisory services. We would like to make sure that we get assistance from other areas which can help us monitor. For example, we're making an example there of involving the Auditor General, for example, as part of ensuring that we get feedback from the monitoring. I met with the Auditor General himself and explored this area. We do have an MOU with the Auditor General, and we'll make sure that that MOU continues to have life so that as part of their audits in state institutions, they are able to also consider whether there's areas where SIU has made reports, has made recommendations, and they should be able to check and audit whether those recommendations have been implemented. And if not, then we should be able to have measures to follow up. But not only the Auditor General, Chair, we are exploring also the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, because I'm informed that they do complete what they call delivery agreements with the accounting authorities. So we'd like to at least have that as part of the monitoring area. So, Chair, that's really the message that that slide is saying to the committee, that these are the key enhancements that we would like to achieve. The next one, Chair, it's the slide that shows the operating model, that how is that, that we want to improve on it. Without really going into detail on it, is the operating model that still, if you look at the top, number one is national cases, number two is central central support, number two is regional cases, and number three is central support. Chair, we've made an observation that we need some improvement on the on the regional structure side, and our enhancements will improve on that. Just so that the regions can also do their own business, focused business development, and do their case management and core case investigation and remedial actions. You'll see the same outputs on the left-hand side. In the middle, it's what you could call your enablement, your support functions, and also the central investigation support area, including the civil litigation. As you go down that picture, Chair, you'll see there's a prevention area which would like our operating model to enhance. Going down, we want to ensure that we improve on the enablement, which is really the support to the business. We want to ensure that we improve on the business oversight. If you look at the bottom there, on the left hand side, we want to ensure that on an ongoing basis, stakeholder relations is also maintained. And then on the extreme right, you'll see the most important part that we'd like to introduce is the market data analytics, which is something that will really add value to the state institutions. Chair, in line with the and engagement items for the committee, we are indicating on slide number 50 the challenges and the mitigation strategy, some of which I may have touched on in the presentation, but I'll go through those one by one. I did indicate that one of the areas we've identified is that the proclamations were previously wide and in nature. The new strategy is to then focus them and then ensure that from our multi-year running proclamations, we issue interim reports with clear focused outputs. Chair, the second challenge there is the non-payment by state institutions. We've identified that. And Chair, we have put in place measures that would ensure that we really work with the state institutions to ensure that they pay. Of importance is to regularly interact with the state institutions where we show the accounting authorities and accounting officers and their CFOs what have we delivered, just so that they can be able to pay. Well, that's what we get confronted with, that we need to know what is it that you've done so that, you know, we can release. But in some instances, Chair, the state institutions raise budget issues. But as you see the third bullet point there, we are currently reviewing our funding model. We are in engagement with this, with the National Treasury. Chair, I would like to have this as part of the proposed legislative changes, just so that we have a sustainable funding model. Chair, as mentioned, the delay in finalizing our civil matters is one of the challenges. The mitigation strategy there is that we are busy with the re-establishment of the special tribunal. We have engaged with the judges president of the various courts. There is mechanisms, even before we ultimately re-establish the state special tribunal, just so that we put in place measures to fast-track our cases. Chair, we make referrals to the NPA, and we require a mechanism where we can monitor the cases, Chair. We have just concluded our memorandum of understanding with NPA, and we have signed it. That memorandum of understanding envisages a monitoring structure which will report to myself and to the National Director of Public Prosecution to say where are those cases at any particular point in time. The feedback from state institutions regarding the implementation of referred disciplinary actions and systemic recommendations, I've indicated earlier on those measures that we'd like to put in place to monitor those referrals. Limitations in dealing with pre-proclamation activities. What we mean by that, Chair, is that although at the moment we are able to receive allegations, we are able to follow up on and request documentation just so that we do the assessment, but we require that space to be regularized in a manner that we should be able, even at that stage, to utilize SIU powers. So at the moment, we have made recommendations for legislative changes. Our indication, the information we've received, is that part of the legislative recommended change could be part of the Judicial Amendment Act or bill that will be put through in a short time to come. If that gets through, Chair, we should then be able to utilize our powers, even at the pre-proclamation space. Chair, we have realized that we've got an uneven spread of proclamation, but in this case, really around the internal business development efforts, which we will improve even at a regional level. Chair, the last slide, it's how we see us continuously, engaging and working with this honourable committee and how the honourable committee can assist. We're obviously open to further views from the honourable members in terms of how we can, really synergize, so to speak, our efforts. And bearing in mind, Chair, we said today we've got two bullet points on that slide. As the committee engages with the state institutions and picks up matters that requires investigation, we know that the committee is in a position to refer those matters to law enforcement, be it the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, the Hawks. We are saying you could also refer matters to SIU that requires further that requires investigation. Chair, in the last bullet point there, saying we would like the committee's support in discouraging the state institutions from referring matters to private sector forensic firms, as this will save costs for the state. Chair, we are confident that if we just continue on this trajectory of improvement in terms of capacity, turnaround times, quality of investigations, quality of reports, follow up on the recommendations that we have made, ensure that we make the necessary impact, ensure that those referrals are acted on so that anyone who is guilty of a criminal offense, of a corrupt activity, anyone who is guilty of misconduct can be acted on. Chair, we will then see our vision and mission being achieved of being a preferred service provider for our services. Chair, that sees the end of the substantive presentation. The last slide, 52, is really our footprint of where we are in the country. With the exception of Northern Cape, we've got presence in all the provinces. But as I said, Chair, we have recently been to the Northern Cape, where we have had stakeholder engagements with other law enforcement, and I had the opportunity to engage with the DG of the province, and he's also saying, SIU should consider being present in the province there. We will apply our minds and consider that, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Tibi. Comrades, I will ask Comrade Kitane to lead. I requested him last night to look at the presentation a little bit closer. So I'll give him the first opportunity, and then we can then all come in. Comrade Kitane.
No offense, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation and also indicate that unfortunately, because we are not going to follow, that is the normal trend of questioning and that is questions and answer session. Some of the information that you have given us, it is actually the information that we're looking for. Because as this committee, we are worried about consequence management. Calling departments to appear before us and raising a number of issues without that is finalizing them, it is the biggest problem that we seem to be having. But there are issues that I just need clarity, because some of the issues that I highlighted, fortunately in your presentation, you managed to cover them. There is an issue on the third slide.
Slide, you mean slide number three?
Yes, third slide, slide number three. Okay. When you are out of SIU mandate, the issue of the feedback, because in some cases you find that in your investigation or let me say the investigation reveals that this issue must be referred to the department for internal that is disciplinary action. My question is, do you have a tracking, because you spoke about it, that is the tracking mechanism. But I'm worried about currently, what is the current situation? Because you are saying going forward, in your plan, you are proposing that you need to have a tracking mechanism. But the question is, currently, what is the situation? How do you track that is whether those departments have implemented that is those disciplinary hearings, and what was the outcome?
Thank you for the question, Honorable Member. Currently, the process is as follows. When we complete the investigation, put together the report, and we submit to the President. As I indicated, that during the investigation, we would have made those referrals. Shortly after I joined the organization, and as part of interrogating, what is it that's been done and the business model, I then posed a similar question, that for us to make an impact, where we cannot just refer and submit the report and end there. We need to make sure that we follow up with the state institutions to ensure that we find out and establish whether they've acted on our recommendation, including the referrals to the National Prosecuting Authority. So, previously, I think it was happening, but not in a structured way. So we started a process where we engage with the presidency as the owner of the final report. We sat with the presidency and we agreed on the measures that we'll put in place to ensure that we track. And that's currently happening. The presidency also informed us that they are doing that already. When they receive the report, they notify the state institution concerned and they do make follow-ups. I think what needed to improve, to be improved, understanding will help us. We've included Department of Justice in there as well, as an interested party. So what we will do, we've set up a structure, a monitoring and evaluation structure within the MOU. That structure has got the terms of reference. And the terms of reference includes being in contact and contacting the state institution involved so that they can either be called on to submit a report of where they are with the referrals that we have made. So I did indicate that in our own right as SIU we could also, you know, follow up, but we wouldn't want to sort of duplicate and confuse the state institutions. So if we do it in that structured manner, we should get the utmost output so that we identify all of those reports with all the referrals, including this exercise that we are busy with. Once we've completed this exercise and we know comprehensively all of those referrals, including those that we have presented to the committee, we should then channel it through that structure, and that structure should do the work of following up on an ongoing basis. Thank you, Chair.
My question is, what is your fallback position in case that they don't comply? Because, as I indicated earlier on, our biggest problem is consequence management. And when you check, for instance, some of the departments that you've indicated, there's one department that has plus minus 900 and so, that is cases. That clearly indicates that they are not implementing, that is just consequence, the consequence management that we are referring to. And you find that there's a backlog that is of these disciplinary hearings. Now, in that case, do you, in your proposal, are you building in, that is, a mechanism as part of the fallback position in case they don't comply?
Thank you for that, Honourable Member. I think it's something that we will sort of just take back, but we did also take that into account. We'll just have to sort of make sure that it's included in the mechanisms. But what we had envisaged is that once the follow-ups have been made and we find that they have not been implemented, we would then follow the escalation process. We would then escalate to the accounting authority, if need be, to the executive authority, just so that there's appropriate escalations, and everyone who needs to be cited and informed is informed. And I'm glad that, you know, from time to time we will have also the opportunity to, you know, engage and present to this committee, just so that the committee is also cited. And one way or another, when you engage with the state institutions, you could already have, you know, an indication of where there's a lack of those implementation, and then we then would be able to take that up with state institutions. But Chair, Honourable Member raises a really question that also occupied us as we now make these proposed legislative changes. We know that based on the Constitutional Court pronouncements relating to the remedial action of the public protector, that one is clear. In our case, the remedial actions that we recommend, we would like to consider a legislative proposal that could, you know, just ensure that, you know, we have a legislative backing to get this proposed referrals implemented. Yet. We're not there yet, but those are the mechanisms just to respond directly to the question. If we find that referrals are not acted on, we would like for now escalate it appropriately to the level that really needs to be informed, just so that action is taken. Thanks.
No thanks. Let's then move to your price structure. The question is, the price that you indicated there, is it per case, per hour, or what is the situation on page 8? And the other issue is, are they industry that is prices? Because initially you spoke about being the preferred forensic that is investigating team. Now the prices that we are charging, I just want to check whether are they charged by other forensic that is institutions, or maybe you just thumbsucked that is the figures. How did you come to that is the figures indicated here?
No, thank you very much, Chair. We've benchmarked as we arrive at the figures, and I'll allow probably our CFO also to make a point, or even the project director to confirm that point. We've made benchmarks. We've looked at the Auditor General's rate. We've looked at the forensic firms' rates out there, just so that we ultimately come to our rating. Perhaps I should give our project director, who is very much the custodian of investigations in our institution, to make a further comment.
No, that's fine. Let me check Comrade Kekana if your response suffices.
Okay.
Confirm that you have benchmarked. You did not just come back.
The other issue in your presentation that you indicated, and I think we have discussed that is in our committee, the issue of the departments that owe you. Because obviously most of the departments, when you read your report, is that they somehow don't cooperate with you. Cooperate in the sense that they don't pay. Now, what do you do, and who are those departments that is in trying to recoup that is what they owe you? Because the strategy might be, we are not going to pay them. At the end, this whole thing is going to collapse. That might be the intention. I'm not saying that is the intention. Now, my question is, which departments are those, and what mechanism do you have in trying to recoup that is what they owe you?
No, thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Chair, as I indicated, we work on a sort of cost recovery model, fee for services. Part of our legislation, Chair, says although we are, legislatively allowed to, levy the fees, but it does also provide that where state institutions, it does provide for them to apply for some exemption, and the basis of exemption, as we have picked up as we engage with the state institution, is that we have not planned for this investigation, we have not budgeted for this investigation, so those are the kind of explanations that we meet. But also, I need to just say that some would say, we would like to know what is it that the investigation has produced. There have been calls for SIU to submit the final reports to the state institutions. And our response on that one has been, the legislation enjoins us to submit the report to the president. But however, we've come to this determination that we will give them just a statement of deliverables and outcomes that we have reached without submitting the final report. And I think that will go a long way in really satisfying them what has been done, what has been delivered, and what is it that they are paying for, right? Which I think it's of critical importance. But, Chair, what is it that we are doing? We have identified the state institutions that owe SIU, and Chair, I don't really have the list with me at the moment. What we could do is to just finish the committee, if need be, with the list of debtors. But what we do is that we have really realized, and we have since we have started this direct engagement with the state institutions, we've seen that it adds some value. And when we engage with their CFOs, their accounting authorities, where we really take them through these deliverables and what we have delivered, it does produce results. We have seen some recently following on those kind of engagements. You know, but we're still at the level where our debt level needs really to be reduced and reduced drastically. But at the moment, that's really what we do, so that we've escalated to our executive authority. Our minister has written letters.
But if the problem of departments not paying is that serious, I would imagine that either yourself or your CFO should be having those departments on your fingertips. So I think let one of your officials find that list in the meantime. I think it is an important aspect to be left for another day.
Chair will make sure that we access it, and then we can even provide it today to you, Chair.
No. Now during the meeting.
All right. All right, Chair. I'll do that. I see that there's a list that has been placed before me, but I want to make sure.
No, that's fine.
Do you more or less have a ballpark figure as to how much do they owe you?
Yes. I do have. At the moment, our figure is standing at about 400 plus million that's been owed.
Okay, now as the chairperson indicated, let's focus on that and make sure that at least there's some movement on that part. Because obviously you won't be able, that is, to continue with the nice presentation that you have just made. It is exciting, but if there are no resources, at the end of the day, you won't achieve anything. Okay. The other issue that I'm interested in is the turnaround time in terms of that is the investigation of a case. For instance, if you look at page 17, you try to clarify that is the issue of their submission, that some cases were submitted in 2013 and all that. Now, I need more or less to have an idea of a turnaround time, that is in terms of case referrals, how long do you take up until you complete that is the case.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. At the moment, Chair, our analysis tells us that the average time that we tend to turn around the investigation is about 3 to 4 years. That's the average time. That's quite a long time, Chair. And we've identified that, and we've put in place measures that whatever it is that has been a blockage, it's dealt with, and we see the results. If you can look at the number of reports that are pending to be submitted, we've really unlocked that. Where some of the issues, I would say, where there has been capacity issues, we've really looked at through the project director's office. We've looked at where is it that we can assist the investigations, just so that we don't have issues around the obtaining of evidence. We do have the powers in terms of our legislation that should enable us to get the evidence that's required. Where appropriate, we use that. But I think it's really been a situation just where we interact with our teams internally to ensure that they are spread out equitably, and just so that we monitor that they deliver in terms of the project timelines.
Okay. you indicated that you are responsible in terms of your investigation. You are responsible for all three spheres of government. Now, my question is, out of these three spheres, which sphere would you say you experience a lot of problems in terms of cooperation?
Chair, from a cooperation perspective, I really don't think that there's material issues around that. What we have really experienced cooperation from state institutions. As I say, if we realize that there's issues around, because more often we find that the lower officials from the executive, if there's issues with getting in information or evidence, then we immediately escalate so that we unlock that process, and we have seen that it works. Because we cannot say that the state institution is not cooperating until we have really escalated it until to the accounting authority or accounting officer. So for me to be able to say the state institution is not cooperating, I should have then, as they say, exhausted internal processes up to the accounting authority to ensure that there's cooperation. As we see today, there are no material issues around cooperation.
That sounds interesting, because we were of the impression that there are some bottlenecks here and there, and unfortunately there's no cooperation, particularly on some of the cases that we were told that they were referred to you. Let me put it that way. Because we meet with quite a number of departments, and we follow up on cases, and they would just give us an information that, no, this matter has been referred to the SIU. Then when we follow up, that is on that, they would clearly indicate to us that, no, it is outside our, that is our hands, because it is referred to the SIU. Now, we just wanted to establish, because thanks that you have given us a list of those cases, we would be in a position to zoom into a particular case and say, we met with the SIU. In the last engagement we had with you, you indicated to us that this was just referred to the SIU, you have not yet received feedback. And hence I wanted to get clarity in terms of the cooperation. But if you don't have issues on cooperation, I appreciate it. Chair, linked to the issue of the cases that you have here, is it possible for you maybe to give us, that is, a report that is on those cases? I know some information is highly sensitive, because this, obviously, the public is viewing this, and some of the departments are also that is viewing this. But we would need a list of those cases, if it is possible, and as to how far are we in terms of those cases, and how soon can we, meaning, because I take you now as part of our team, how soon can we resolve those cases? Because we cannot. I heard you earlier on, you said the turnaround time is plus minus 3 to 4 years. But we cannot investigate that this case is for more than that. At least we need finality, particularly on these high-profile cases. Because when you look at departments like SASSA, for instance, I know that there is an investigation on SASSA, Department of Water Affairs, that is all those departments, that at least if we can get an idea as to how far are we in terms of that, and what are the issues there.
Chair, thank you very much for that observation by the honourable member. Yes, indeed. I mean, those we can provide those details, but as the honourable member indicates that there's some sensitivities around some of the, you know, those information. We'd really just to determine, and we'll probably be guided by the committee in terms of how we share that information with the committee such that it doesn't become public, because we do not want to prejudice the investigation, so to speak. So Chair, I think this is an item which we can engage on. Just top of mind, I would say, if we provide that to the committee in camera, so to speak, then that should suffice. But we can consider that, Chair. Thanks.
But you understand, Mama. You understand that is my concern. I'm saying, because we don't want to also interfere with the investigation. You see? Because if you disclose some of the investigation, we might pick up problems, that is in terms of the entire investigation. All what you're saying on sensitive issues, let's deal with them, that is privately. So that at least we do have an idea as to how far are we, that is in terms of those cases.
No, Chair, we do understand the honourable member's comments, and we could prepare a detailed, call it status update on each case, where we are, and if there are any hurdles, we indicate what is the estimated time to completion. If there are any issues, we point them out. Yeah, we can do that, and at an appropriate moment, we can share it, as the honourable member says, privately, just so that the information is not public. Thanks.
The other issue, you came up with a very interesting model that is going forward. Now, whilst you were presenting, I was a bit worried in terms of your capacity. Do you have enough capacity, that is, to do all these nice things that you have just indicated here?
For that, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we are in the middle of the organisational review project, and part of what we are focusing at is the capacity model. We are doing capacity modelling, which will tell us, both in the region and in the centre, what is the kind of capacity that we need. Looking at the work at hand, and when we lift up our business development initiatives in the center and other regions, we are likely to see business, so to speak, come through. And that capacity model should be able to position us so that going forward, as we want to be a preferred state service provider, we need to be able to have an appropriate capacity. And we are looking at completing this project, Chair, by no later than the end of the financial year. We should be able to know the capacity that we need and go out there and be capacitated, obviously subject to the funding that's available. But currently, yes, we do have that capacity to turn around those investigations at hand. But should this strategy be implemented and succeed, we need to also look at improving the capacity. Thanks.
Okay. On a lighter note, you responded like a politician. Because you are also saying, that is in your last slide, you want us to assist you in discouraging departments that is to use you. And the answer that you are giving me, you are not sure whether you do have enough capacity that is to deliver on this issue. You are saying it is dependent on the additional resources that you'll be getting. Now, the immediate question will be, if you don't get those resources, what then happens?
Mr. Chair. So once we've completed the capacity modeling, Chair, at the moment we've sort of put on hold the recruitment process until this project is completed. By,
I think, by, by,